Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
He did not practice yesterday or Wednesday. He said, and the 49ers said that they're fine playing him if he does not practice. But we're talking about a knee sprain. You're talking about your, all-pro guy that you just paid a lot of money to, and it's an early in the season, and you're playing a really bad team, and you probably don't need him. Even if he does play, I'm not sending him on a lot of downfield routes. I want to protect that knee as best I can. So, like you said, there are other options. I did a five keys to the game that came online this morning, and one of them was OBK instead of OBJ. Get it? It was options beyond Kittle. And you're going to have Jordan Reed. You're going to have Ross Dwelly maybe even as your other tight end. You have all the running backs who showed in that opener that they can catch the ball, and it wasn't just Jerick McKinnon that we were all waiting for who had the touchdown to go ahead in the fourth quarter, but you had Mostert. And he had his big touchdown catch to start the game off. So they don't need to George Kittle to push his knee. They have other options, but again, this is a team that they cannot start 0-2. So if Kittle's okay to go, then play him, but I don't think you push it.
It was interesting because you said, hey, look, you wouldn't be surprised if Sanu didn't play, let the other guys play. I saw the same thing, Cam, that a lot of guys were open. You know, Jimmy just got to trust and turn it loose. So why Sanu then? Then why bring him in if you feel, which you look at the double move that, you know, he got Peterson, stops his feet. If Jimmy G lets the ball go, it's an easy layup. You know, the fourth down, you know, let the ball go, timing. It's an easy first down, move the chains. So when you're looking at those, so why Sanu then? We're not going to play him. What is he going to add to the table?
There's a couple reasons, Lo, and it's, you know, obviously number one is Sanu and Kyle Shanahan have familiarity with each other going back to 2016 with the Falcons. So he's somewhat familiar with Shanahan's concepts. And Kyle trusts him, you know, I think that goes a long way as too. But this is still an injury depleted receiving core. You know, Richie James is not going to play probably because he pulled his hamstring in the opener. Debo's out. You know, you lost Jalen Hurd in day two of training camp. And so the fact that you can bring in the vet and you didn't have to bring him in week one and guarantee his contract, now you can bring him in, make sure that, you know, he had ankle surgery, I think, only 6 months ago. So you make sure everything's good there. And then just have him at the ready. And, you know, maybe next week he's a much bigger factor, but by week four you're going to have Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, hopefully, as your starting wide receivers, and Trent Taylor in the slot. But if Sanu's capable and should, again, Mohamed Sanu got cut by the New England Patriots, who don't exactly have a stockpile of great wide receivers. So it's not like you're getting an all-pro that the Falcons got in 2016, a guy that was hot and hungry for a title coming out of Cincinnati. I think he's going to be very happy to play in Kyle Shanahan's offense, because if you're on the field, there's a great chance Shanahan's going to be able to scheme a way to get you open and get you yards, no matter who it is.
Yeah, Mohamed Sanu is basically an inexpensive insurance policy. Cam Inman with us here, 95.7 The Game, Whitey Low and Dibs, Whitey in for Coz, who will be back on Monday. Cam, I know we're focusing on the Jets, but one more about last week, if I may. What about Sunday's result against Arizona? Do you think surprised Kyle Shanahan the most? If anything about that outcome actually surprised him?
That's a good question, because there was, you know, the late game collapse isn't a surprise, right, because they just got over a Super Bowl with one. The defensive front, I think they knew they were going to have trouble with Kyler Murray's escapability, but I think at the same time they probably wanted to see more out of some guys. I think Nick Bosa had a really good game. And that's almost automatic at this point in his career, which is crazy. Kerry Hyder made a decent debut. Javon Kinlaw did not appear to have a good debut from just watching him, you know, there at the stadium. But then you go back and watch film, and you talk about this guy had a lot of power, and he did. He had a lot of pleasant, like, it was a pleasant surprise watching him kind of get in there and mix it up. And, again, he's not facing all-pro guards that the Arizona Cardinals have. They don't have a very good offensive line. Neither do the Jets. So Kinlaw's making strides. I think those were pleasant. There was miscommunication in the back end of the secondary on that last catch that DeAndre Hopkins had, and that cost them. And I think that surprised everybody, all the defenders, Robert Saleh, Kyle Shanahan. Did it cost them the game? Not necessarily, because there was a lot of other breakdowns. And you know, whether the Cardinals were able to extend drives because Kyler Murray was sliding and picking up some ticky-tack penalties on the Niners, that wasn't good. But that happens in the course of a game.
How is D Ford? How is his health? You know, seemed like watching that out there on the field, seemed like he's putting a foot in the ground. And once he got engaged and once they locked on him, seemed like he just stops. I don't know if his knee's still hurting. Doesn't seem like he's just that explosive. You know, like you see guys come off the corner.
Well, that's a great question, because yesterday at practice there was no D Ford, and that set off the alarm bells going, oh, what is it now? Because he had a calf injury that kept him out for a couple weeks in training camp. He's had hamstring. He's had a lot of different issues in his career. Well, it turned out that he's on the injury report for missing yesterday's practice because of a neck injury. Robert Saleh would only tell us that he's not overly concerned about it. But then he deferred all questions to Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers training staff, which is leaves a lot of room for mystery. And anytime you're dealing with a neck injury, I'm always concerned about it. Did he just sleep on it wrong? You got to hope that's the case. Is it a disc issue? Then that's a major concern. And this is a guy that just restructured his contract right before the season started. So he was supposed to make, I think, about $13 million, and then it got reduced to $900,000 because he cashed it in as a bonus. This guy's getting paid a lot of money the last 2 years for the Niners, has not been able to stay healthy. He had 6.5 sacks last regular season, was not a factor against the Arizona Cardinals. And that is something we're going to be watching for more today, Lowe, and we'll talk to Kyle Shanahan in about 5 hours.
D. Ford is too young to have sleep-related injuries, Cam. As you know, you get closer to 50, and that's where sleep can be a real detriment to one's health. Cam Inman here, 95.7 The Game. Frank Gore going up against the 49ers. I know you were able to cover Frank for a long time, a long part of his early career. Do you have a special Frank Gore memory or vignette, or what was it like covering old number 2-1?
Oh, my gosh. Frank Gore was just the best, you know, just in terms of he would see us in the locker room, you know, and he'd say, hey, what's everybody saying about me, man? And not just you guys, what are they saying about me nationally? He wanted to know if he was getting that respect nationally from him. I'll tell you one funny Frank Gore story. You know, as many yards as he runs through and as many games as he's played, one of the best attributes for Frank Gore was his pass protection, his ability to pick up the blitzing linebacker or whatever, and Lowe, you would agree with this. And I said to Frank one year, like, we're probably about 7 games in the season, I'm like, hey, Frank, there's a stat out there. You've picked up all 38. You're 38 for 38 on your pass protections. And he just looks at me and he goes, well, bleep, I may as well be a mother bleeping fullback.
Ah, I love it.
And, you know, it's just, and he was such, he is such a good-hearted guy. And I remember he had a Jamba Juice, gave him some kind of like an energy drink they were trying to come up with, and he's like, hey, try this. And I'm like, looking at it, I go, well, there's sugar in it. And he's like, oh, you're smart then. Yeah, don't ever drink the energy drinks with sugar. They're not good for you. So Frank was aware of everything that was going in his body, and you know, he was one of a kind. It just, we all have some favorite Frank Gore memories. And you know, we were asking Nick Bosa about him yesterday. And Bosa said that he had just met Frank Gore at the Super Bowl after they lost, when Frank came into the locker room to console him. And he said, you know, he's an unbelievable, he really seems like an unbelievable dude. Unfortunately, he's the enemy this week, and I've got to go get him. So, and that is the case.
Cam, this isn't really a question, an observation, but speaking of Frank Gore, I'm reminded you have 3 former Niners this year. Of course, Frank Gore, Alex Smith, and Alden Smith, 3 former 49ers, all of them doing very, very inspirational things right now, right?
there's a lot of ex-Niners that are kind of back on the radar, and that is cool to see. And I don't know if we'll ever see Alex Smith play, but the fact that he's in position to do so and is in uniform for Washington, or can be, I think that's the story of the year for the Comeback Player of the Year award. Alden had a decent debut with Dallas. You know, I think everybody, anytime you bring this up, though, is they go, well, what about Kaepernick? He's been out of the league, you know, for what is this, year four now. And that to me, that still is very surprising considering the quarterback play around the league. But I think we're past the moment where, you know, he had that tryout last year. He didn't look great at it. There's so much more that he's doing with his life right now, and I don't think any NFL team, despite, you know, today's sociological climate, are willing to take him on.
Cam, thanks so much for your time and your insight. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Enjoy the game, sir. We look forward to your coverage.
All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. Cam, thanks for having me on.
Yep, Cam Inman, all guests, of course, on 95.7 The Game, appear on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Visit BayAreaChevroletDealers.com to find a dealer near you. Now, Dibs asked a question, and it was a good question, and Cam says, that's a good question, Dibs. And then I asked a question, goes, that's a good question. And then Lowe asked one, that's a great question. So, goodness. I guess, yeah. Lowe gets the,
because
the
I'm gonna,
crown of superiority today.
Yes.
No, because, go ahead, Daniel. Because
no, I let off with a base hit, and then Whitey doubled in the gap. I was unable to score, and then you cleared the bases with the great question. You get the three-run bomb. Yeah, I get the plucky little single, and, well, you know, Whitey gets a solid double, but I got a late jump, so I couldn't score. And then you cleaned up with the great question. So congrats. You wear the crown of superiority, and I can just hope that we have another guest today, so perhaps I can wrest that from the big dome.
I have
I believe you
somewhere.
Can. I mean, you're one of those... You're one of those guys, Dibs, that's always
nice.
Are you done, Whitey? Are you done? Was that all you was going to add? Barry Zito. Was that it?
I was answering his question. I'm sorry. I thought he asked a question. I thought, he said Barry Zito's at 9 o'clock. Go ahead, Lo. Your thoughts.
Yes, thank you. Well, you know, Dan, you're a guy that's always looking to, you know, to continue and up your game. So I have no question or no reserve that you will definitely surpass me. The reason why my question was, I thought, pretty candid and pretty interesting is because I'm not sold on this guy. I know I like him as a person. I think he's a hell of a player when he's well. He's hell. But Dibs, I'm surprised you didn't jump on this earlier because you've been tracking the last year. You're like, man, what's up with D Ford? And once you started that and talking about, hey, we're bringing in a guy that's injured, I started watching. And the guy is a racehorse. If he's well, this dude can get after the quarterback. He's got great bend, can get low, get underneath tackles, and get by him. He can't separate right now, guys. And last year he showed signs at times, but I'm telling you, it's a concern. I think they gave him all the money anticipating this, and now he's making the minimum. This is a guy that if they continue to struggle, they'll give him, because it's only $900,000. That's what his base salary is now, $1 million, because they gave him his money up front. So now I think that's a situation where you are looking to see what you can do, Dibs, and I don't know if this guy, in my opinion, will be on this team this year, the whole year.
Yeah, you made that call, I think, a week ago or before last game or perhaps after the game. I can't recall which way, but you're not wrong, because availability is everything. It's not the number one ability is availability. Availability is everything, and you can't make the club in the tub. And if you get a neck injury, and we already know he's had a myriad of injuries, and when he's well, he's hell. But can he be well again? That ultimately is the $15 million question.
Yeah, so the 49ers, of course, trying to avoid an 0-2 start. They should be able to do that against the Jets. But Lo and Dibs, what do you think is the biggest issue the Jets present for the 49ers? We think we know the Jets are not very good. We know they got rolled by the Bills last week. But if you're the 49ers right now, shorthanded, and you're looking at this Jets team, where do you think they pose the most potential problems for you? Okay, I guess we're not too concerned about it.
I thought we were going to the football guy on that one. I think it's got to be Frank Gore in the run game, because Sam Darnold doesn't scare you. I don't think that the Jets have enough weapons. They don't have enough vertical threats, even with a depleted Niner secondary, to really scare you. I'm not sold on Sam Darnold as a difference maker. So for me, it's the run game, because Frank Gore is going to be highly motivated to come out and show out against his former team.
For me, Whitey, It's those guys that we think that the 49ers were known for, and that's the guys up front. I think that's a concern. I watched last week game differently. I watched last week game that the defense looked really good in the first half, shutting down the run, containing, you know, Kyler Murray. And then in the second half, I saw him get tired. And so now I'm saying I understand that Darnold's not going to be that guy. But I'm going to tell you right now, to play 7-7, you can go out there today, Dibs and Whitey, and play 7-on-7. That means no one's coming at you, and you get the timing. You'll hit some of the passes. Maybe go 50, you know, 50%, or maybe it depends on what level you're playing against. But when you think about that, if the pressure's not there, when everything can slide to Nicky Bosa, you brought in a rookie who can push the pile, who's a great run stopper. He graded that well because he can hold guys and help the linebackers get downhill. He's good there. But what about in a pass game? Can they get after the quarterback? I mean, not sack him, but make sure he doesn't have time to throw the ball. Because if you give him too much time, he can't hurt you.
Lo, if you're the coach and Dibs, you're his offensive coordinator, is that okay? Will you abide by that scenario for the purposes of the – okay. All right. So you guys saw you've been watching the All-22 of the 49ers lost Arizona. And I know the personnel obviously is vastly different. Your Jets personnel is different than what Arizona puts on the field. But are you looking at that going, hey, you know what? Maybe at some point here we're going to go no huddle on these guys if we have any momentum going, because Arizona had some success with that. And as you said, Lo, it looked like the 49er defense wore down in the second half. So is that something that's maybe part of your game plan potentially?
I think it could be.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially Lo, and we saw this not only in the 49er game, but across football with no home crowd and no home crowd noise as an impediment. Calamari, as we like to call him, was able to go out there and set up shop rather easily in the no huddle. And, right. You know, you're able to get to the line of scrimmage and basically look out to the wide receiver and almost whisper to him, hey, run an eight route, you know, because there's no crowd noise. It's a lot easier.
You got to get home. You got to get home, Whitey, this week. You got to get home and get Darnold off the spot. You got to, you know, you got to hit him. You got to beat him up, and you got to make him uncomfortable. You got to make him uncomfortable in the pocket. You can't let him just sit back there and play, you know, 7-on-7. That's what I keep alluding to. And you can't let Frank Gore get going, because now if they win on first and second down and they're in third and two or three, now you can move the chains. You still can run the ball, and you don't take the running game out. Now defense can't pin their ears back and try to go get the quarterback. They got to now hit their gap and now read, because they got to think pass. They got to think run first. And also, if it's third down and two or three, now, boom, you're looking at screens and draws. If you guys get too far up the field, boom, the sprint and draw. So I think this Jets team offensively and what the coach is going to do, they're going to say, can the Niners hurt us on offense? Can they score a bunch of points on offense? Are they going to go up by 14? If not, if I'm the Jets, I make this nasty. I say, let's play the same game that Arizona tried. Let's keep this game close, and let's find a way to win it late. That is what they're going to do. That's what the Jets are going to do if the San Francisco 49ers let them stick around. The San Francisco 49ers need to come out and make a statement and put their feet on their throat and knock them out. You cannot let this be a close game. I do not. I believe personally that this game won't be close, because the Niners know if they're in a close game, they know they may not win. If you're Kyle Shanahan, I'm telling you guys, he's in there preaching, boys, let's be aggressive. They are not going to not be aggressive. You have to be aggressive. And aggressive means you still can run the ball, more counters, more misdirection, more screens. Go with tempo. Be fast. Get them out on the edge. Put pressure on the defense. Put passes that, hey, flare screens. Make things happen where you're putting pressure on the defense right away. Get the ball in receiver's hands and let them make plays. Look for the Niners play with up-tempo, because they can't. I don't think they're good enough right now to keep game closes.
It's a football Friday. Whitey Lo and Dibs. Whitey in for Coz. Coz is back on Monday. He'll be back from Tennessee. But you look at the 49ers. You got Ayuk coming back, and you have your backups coming back. That's great. D Ford is banged up. We don't know. Richard Sherman is out. I know the Jets are without their top receiver. But at some point, does it start to become the 49ers themselves wondering about what is going on here? Is it a Super Bowl hangover? I mean, it's one thing to be without Ayuk last week and Debo. Richard Sherman, without Richard Sherman defensively, I mean, they're in trouble in the secondary, aren't they? I mean, they really are in trouble potentially.
I will see, and it depends on what Lowe's talking about, which is go home. Great Stevie Wonder song from the late 80s. If they can get home and heat up Darnold, then your secondary is going to be protected. And we saw that last year. Going into last year, I was among the chorus of people saying the secondary is a problem. They're going to get crushed back there. Well, your pass rush was so good, they don't have to cover quite as long. And so the secondary all of a sudden looked a lot better. So if they're able to heat up Darnold, then we're on to something. You mentioned Super Bowl hangover. What's the best way to cure a hangover? Start drinking.
Hair of the dog.
Is the answer.
Hair of the dog.
Yeah. What's the best way to get out of your Super Bowl hangover? Start winning. If you go to New York, and yeah, there's a hangover. They blew it against Kansas City, and they came out, and it was a winnable game against Arizona, and you didn't get it done. If you go to the Jets, and you don't get the win, and now you're 0-2, now that hangover becomes a splitting headache. You've got dehydration. You've got mud butt. Mm. Go out there, low, get a win. Wow, the best cure for a hangover, hair of the dog. You need a W. You need one this Sunday. Then you get another one against New York, and all of a sudden, the hangover's gone. You started drinking again. We're back at it, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, and they need to get that thing going. They need to come off the bus drinking shots because they need to get on this team quick. When you're playing against – no, seriously, Whitey, when you're playing against a bad team, don't give them any hope. Don't give them hope that they belong there. That's what you can't do. Think about what Arizona, three and out. You look at the first half, they only had like 4 minutes in the first quarter, 3 minutes, the ball control. It was three and out. You can't let teams stick around. When you go for the juggler, you put them out of their misery. They don't want to be there. You slap them in the face. Once you keep a team hanging around, you're in trouble. The Niners can't let this little Jet team think that they belong here. You need to come out and you need to show dominance. You need to show why you're the best team in the NFC. Because right now, there's a narrative out there that you're not no longer the best team in the NFC and you're no longer feared. And so the Niners got to get that respect back. I'm telling you right now, Arizona street cred went up. And I don't know if it should have went up that much, but I'm telling you, the Niners aren't feared like they used to be.
What did you guys think of Cam Inman's answer to my question about what surprised Kyle Shanahan the most? And he mentioned, wow, that defensive breakdown that led to the crucial Arizona touchdown, that really surprised everybody. Salah, everybody was surprised by that breakdown. How significant is that?
It's not that significant. You're talking about a situation where there's no preseason to work out some of the kinks. Breakdowns are going to happen. And if you want to complain about that breakdown, then you can't look at Arizona's breakdown with a little move from Raheem Mostert when he cooked Isaiah Simmons with that little angle route. That's a breakdown in coverage by Arizona. So they broke, you broke. It's going to happen early on in an NFL season.
Yeah, it really is. And I think when you look at the Niners and you say, God, what happened? You're trying to play man on one side. You're trying to play zone on another side. You weren't doing that. And guys didn't pass off. The guys are not talking. They're not communicating. You got to have better communicating. And, you know, Salah's got to do a better job of making sure that his secondary is all on the same page. I understand when they're playing man one side, zone the other side, how guys are going to pass things off, especially when a guy comes across from playing man and passing to a zone, how guys passing certain things off. So just got to get better. They got to get better.
What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fast Track. So how do the Niners usually play without Richard Sherman? That's coming up next. Whitey Lowe and Dibs, Whitey and Foucault's 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Happy Football Friday. Whitey, Lowe, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Whitey in for Jim Cozumore, who returns on Monday. Lowe and Dibs, it seems to me that pandemic football panic is a little more intense than regular football panic, and maybe that's why so many 49er fans are having such a tough time this week. That said, you lose the Super Bowl, you got all these injuries, Jimmy G looks kind of meh. I can understand why 49er fans are approaching week two against the Jets with some trepidation.
Yes, and some urgency. Trepidation is one of our favorite words here on this very program, and you always have to approach a road game with a certain amount of trepidation, as Lowe knows all too well. Whitey, if they happen to go to the Meadowlands and lose to the Jets and fall to 0-2, you can go ahead and rename it Panic Clara, because people will be panicking down there at 4949 Centennial. Panic Clara.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, go to 957thegame.com or any of our social media accounts. Check out the video with Joe Shasky and Damon Bruce as we show you how to elevate your tailgate, brought to you by Snake River Farms, the pioneer of American Wagyu beef, and Zenny, the official eyewear of the San Francisco 49ers. Here it is, the trepidatious stat of the week. Last week I threw this out, and it was silly. Some people, cowered at the mere mention of it, but you know, the 49ers going into last week, I should say last season, 2019, they were 3-3 against bird teams and 10-0 against everybody else. Like, well, they lost to a bird team. This is a little more substantial, Low and Dibs. Richard Sherman has missed three games since 2018, and the 49ers are 0-3 in those games. That's a fact chat. Yeah. Low, what do you make of that? Richard Sherman has missed three games since 2018. The 49ers have lost all three. That includes the Falcons' Week 15 win at Levi's Stadium, in which Julio Jones had 134 receiving yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah, guys, I talked about this yesterday. I asked you guys, how many of you guys went fishing? And we talk about going fishing. There's several things that you do when you go fishing, especially when you're a kid. Daddy usually takes care of you. Daddy makes sure he baits it. He puts the hook on. He does all the different things. He puts the anchovies, whatever it may be, whatever chum you're using. Dad's going to get it. Now, you can fish. You can throw it out there. You can cast. You can reel in the fish. You can do all that. But a lot of people can't go ahead and they can't bait it. They don't know what to use. So that's what Richard Sherman is. He's daddy in the secondary. He's the guy that's making sure, getting guys lined up, execute, for they can go and fish, for they can go out and guard guys, putting them in the right position, knowing what to do. That's what makes Richard Sherman unique. That's his leadership. Those are the things that you're going to miss. Now, should you beat the Jets? Absolutely. This, this game is, I believe it's 24 or higher. They're going to score over 24 points. That's just the starting point. And I think that at the most, the Jets can score is 14-17. So I think this game is something like 28-17 best for the Jets. Jets, I don't believe, should be able to score 17 points against this team. If it is, they got to look at themselves. You can't give up big special teams play. You cannot get another punt block. You cannot give up big field position. You got to win those hitting yards. The hitting yards is so important when you're playing Whitey in the National Football League in any sport. You got to make sure those hitting yards, field position. My punter's got to make sure he's punting them deep. You got to make sure that, bam, you're changing field position. On fourth down, okay, kicking it from your own 40, you pin them inside the 10. Okay, now boom, they don't make the first down. Now they're going to punt it back to you. You at the 50, so you at the 50 or the 40. So now you flip field position. Now you can shorten the field. Now you're going to be more easy for you to get the three. So it is very, very imperative that this team executes and plays with a sense of urgency.
Yeah, and you're right, Lo, because you don't want doubt to creep in, and you don't want the Jets to feel in a position where, hey, this is the defending NFC champs. This is a good team. We're underdogs at home, but we have a chance, fellas. I don't know if you see, but if the Niners are up 13-10 midway through the third quarter, or if they're up, like against Arizona, Lo, that's a perfect example. They were up 10-0, and yeah, they're punting the ball away, but your defense is playing well. You're not too worried about Calamari yet. Block punt, field, touchdown, 10-7. Right. Then all you get the rest of the way is 3 points over the final, 22 minutes of that first half, and you let Arizona hang around. So to your point, a fast start, a decisive start, take the belief out of gangrene.
By the way, if I may, for just a moment, sitting here listening to Lo Neal break it down with Dibs, and Lo, of course, played more games than any running back in the history of the NFL, so he knows what he's talking about. And I'm listening to him. I'm realizing as I'm digesting what he says that, Lo Neal is on the Hall of Fame ballot. He's not in there yet, but Joe Buck's going right into the Hall of Fame. I know we talked about this earlier, and I know, Dibs, you point out it's a different wing. It's still the freaking Hall of Fame, and I do not recognize a Pro Football Hall of Fame that has Joe Buck in there and doesn't have Lo Neal. I'm not going there until that's remedied. I don't recognize the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and you could say that about each and every Hall of Fame across this great country and across this great world. None of them are perfect. None of them have every qualified, worthy candidate there's misses across all, and we can go no further than your guy, your role model, your hero in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Oh, well, there's nothing we could do. Bud Selig. Bud Selig's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
But he's my hero.
That's your guy. That's your guy. That was my Bud Selig.
Well, no, that ain't so Whitey.
Whitey's always been a big fan of Alan Bud Selig. And so you got Selig in baseball's Hall of Fame, but Barry Bonds isn't in. So that Hall of Fame is ruined. We could look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we could find acts that are in and acts that should be out. So let's just not pick and pop on Joe Buck, one of the greatest calls in sports history.
Yeah, it's not his fault. He didn't go in there and say, you guys need to put me in the Hall of Fame. They said last night, hey, Joe.
Yeah, I'm doing the game.
You're in the Hall of Fame. Oh, cool. So it's not his fault. It's just wrong. By the way, I may have told you this story before. I visited the Basketball Hall of Fame once around, I was around 20 years ago, and I was looking at all the pictures, and they had some of the captions wrong, and I called them up on the radio and made fun of them for having it wrong,
and then
someone told me, you know, they don't have very much money. They have, like, one guy, and he's doing everything. So I felt really badly, but if it's a Hall of Fame, you got to at least have the captions right, and in this case, you got to have a guy like Lo Neal in there and not Joe Buck. But I know, that's a thing, Lo. It's about the Hall of Fame. What is fame? Fame is like a real, like on Cake Wars, it's like this really cool looking cake, but you can't live on cake. Fame is fleeting. Fame is sweet, but ultimately you don't need it.
Well, me and Dibs, we grew up in an era where it was like, fame, I want to live forever.
Get it, get it.
I want to learn how to fly. Okay, you boys didn't know. Dippers, I thought you were coming with me on that one.
That's a little out of my normal range, Lo. I usually don't try to climb the ladder like that. Coming off a yogurt and granola here at 7:39.
Whitey got up there high. Whitey, you can't be going. I'm sorry, Dibs. Next time I'll start down there in a bear toad.
Let me know when you get to Lou Rawls and head south from there, and that's when I'll be a little bit more interested.
From the 408 here, 888-957-9570. Lo Neal and Tom Flores not in the Hall of Fame, a travesty. Get him in 2020, hashtag get him in 2020. I know we talked about that yesterday. I don't mean to belabor it. I know Lo isn't really especially comfortable talking about all that, but it really the point was driven home to me when last night Joe Buck, hey, Joe, yeah, you're in the Hall of Fame. Oh, that's great, great. Anyway, that's just the nature of the beast right now, right? That's just where we are. It's about fame.
It's okay, because one day, you know what, we'll get there and we'll all celebrate and we'll party like rock stars. We'll party like it's 1999 and we'll go sing a little Abra Abra Kadabra. We want to reach out and grab her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Dib's like, right.
He's not afraid to go. He's got that high pitch.
He's not. You know what? Our boy Jimmy, I mean, he's an old four. When me and Dib starts this, you know, every now and then we'll do a little tango and tash. We'll just start hitting off with some songs and making it in. And your boy Cozy, sometimes he has to run to the hills. So, Whitey, I'm impressed. Impressed with your range.
Yeah, he's more interested in K-pop. So if you know any Korean pop boy bands, Coz is right there for you.
All right.
I'm surprised, Dibs, that you have not been on Coz more. Every time you're off, hit the text line. Coz absolutely just kills Dibbers, and I have to lay up. And you're showing, you know what? You're showing a lot of grace, Dibs. You've been in our four gospels already, so I'm on to Cincinnati.
Thank you, Lo. And you know me, I've always been more about direct conflict as opposed to sniping a guy behind his back. I mean, it's one thing to take a playful shot every now and again, but it's a lot more satisfying to clown a guy to his face, much like I did Nice Guy Steven from 5:50 to 6 this morning.
Yeah.
Right, Speaking of direct conflict, no Richard Sherman. So you got, hopefully, Akello Witherspoon, who's been dealing, with concussion protocol, and hopefully he's okay. Dante Johnson, I mean, I know the Jets are they're down Crowder, and they don't overly impress you with their aerial attack. That said, 49ers secondary, vulnerable, so they'll get after the quarterback, right? D Ford, bad neck. I don't like the way this is coming together for Sunday, Lo.
I don't think anyone likes the way it's coming together. I don't think the coaching staff, front office said, oh, we're just going to go in here and just crush this team. I don't think they're looking at it like that. I think but when you're wounded and you know that you're up against it, you come out scratching, clawing, fighting. You saw last night two teams that were trying to get a win because they knew it was how important it was. They both fought hard. So I think that you're looking at this team now, the San Francisco 49ers, knowing where they're at, knowing the situation, the stakes are high. They know that they're going down there, not one man, not two, but they've been going down a couple men down and guys injured. They're going to fight. And I think that's the saving grace, this Niner team. I think you're going to get a really good performance. You are not going to go out here and lay an egg. You are not going to go out here dibs and not play well. It's too much at stake. These men, this team's not built that way. You got embarrassed at home. You got embarrassed in the second half. You didn't convert on fourth down. You didn't convert any third downs. It's no way that Cal Shanahan will take this team to New York playing that bad, dibs.
No, I can't imagine it. And if you go out there and you have another flat performance and, God forbid, you lose to the Jets, now all of a sudden, Houston, we've got a problem. You want to look for Houston's area code because you're going to need to dial up because you will have a problem at 0-2. Not just because not a lot of teams start 0-2 and make the playoffs, even though this year with seven playoff teams, you have a better chance. But that would be an unsightly, ugly loss. You can't imagine the Jets coming out and hanging 40 on the Niners and winning a shootout. You're right, Lo. If the Jets get 24 points on this Niner defense, I'd be surprised. But if they get 24 and beat you, that would be an absolute shocker.
Right.
Coming up top of the hour, we'll look at 0-2 teams and what it means to go 0-2, what it may mean this year, Dibs. Your point that, hey, it's okay, you have an extra playoff team. I want to ask you about something, Lo. We as fans, we like to analyze and guess what the psychological impact of this play or that play is. Last week, and we saw it last night, too, a couple goal line stands. Last week, the 49ers couldn't get in on fourth down. Does that have any sort of effect on a team? Does a team start to feel beaten down or discouraged when you can't punch it in from point-blank range on fourth down?
What I think it does is you have a great deal of resolve to get better, especially when you're supposed to be a good team. When you're a team that's just coming off a Super Bowl and now coach tells you it's fourth down, guys, it's fourth and one or fourth and less than what it was. And you brought the field goal unit out there, guys on the sideline are looking saying, you don't believe in us? They're looking and saying, oh, my God, we're not going for it on fourth down in less than a yard. We're not good enough to do that. I'm going to tell you right now, I used to love when the coach say fourth down, fourth and one, fourth and inches. Excuse me. And you call the guys out there and you say, let's go goal line, goal line. And you run in and feeling a little different. Usually bring in an extra lineman, whatever you're going to do.
Jumbo!
Pull their neck a little hard.
Rhino!
They're hitting Jumbo, Rhino. You're hitting your belly saying jumbo. You mean big belly, though, so usually bring in a big lineman. So that's why pats the belly. Jumbo! Someone's coming up. And you line up, and it's time to now root hog or die. It's fourth down. It's fourth and inch. It's root hog or die. And so when those calls are made, you're asking me, how does the players feel? When they come off that field and they didn't convert on fourth down, let me tell you, you don't even want to go by your coaches. You don't even want to go by anyone. You walked a long ways. Why? Because now you got to go look at your coaches that looked at you and believed in you, and you failed them. They didn't fail you. You failed that coaching staff. Those Niner players right now, they got to look at the running back coach. He's got to look at it. Bobby Turner, shout out Fresno State, who's the running back coach there. The Cal Shanahan, all those guys on offense, all those offensive coaches, those players had to come back and say, man, we failed you guys because coaches went for it on fourth down, put it on you, and they fell. They fell miserably.
How much would you lick your chops when you were in Tampa Bay and it was you and Mike Allstott when they'd go Rhino or they'd go Jumbo and, you know, Mikey, maybe Warwick was in and Warwick would look over and see you two big fellas come rumbling in the huddle and Warwick would know, all right, we're going to let the big boys eat here. How much would you love that knowing it'd be you at 260 leading Mikey at 255?
Oh, Mikey was, two peeps, probably a little heavier than me actually running out there. I tell you right now, when they called that Rhino and you knew Rhino was coming in the game and I've been on the sideline, I tell you right now, Whitey, my hairs on the back of my neck didn't have much hair, but I tell you right now, they would stand up. I'd run out there feeling a little bit more bigger. And knowing when the defense see me coming, you see they say, goal line. Now they're drawing either the line on the dirt, putting their hand defensive side, and you see they're matching up with you. And then you look, they call the play, you know, I write 60 blast on one, on first down. And you walk up to the line and you look over there and see that linebacker. And I nod at him like, hey, guess what? Here I come.
Here I come. And let him know I'm coming. And I'm bringing hell with me. I used to come to do two things on Sunday, Whitey, and that's chew bubble gum and kick ass. And on Sunday, I was fresh out of bubble gum. Fresh I tell you what, gum. You got me fired up right now. Woo, you got me fired up.
Did you ever run in a zone blocking? I assume Cincinnati, I think you did. Did you ever run in a zone blocking scheme, in which the 49ers typically do, the outside zone? How is it different?
Well, the outside zone running team, yeah, you know what, his name was Carl. He was the offense coordinator when I was down there in New Orleans. And so we had some zone screen. We'd run outside stretch play, so zone. So that tackle and guard, they're trying you reach a man. And even that, you reach a man, so what happens? Usually they're trying to fight to keep their outside head. So you press it. It's slow to the hole and then fast through. So when you get mm-hmm. their outside zone type of scheme, the offensive guys are trying to reach their our defensive men. So a man blocking scheme, it's usually I'm man on man and I'm blocking straight ahead you and a man. It's harder man on man. That's more physical. Zone team, zone running scheme is not as physical because now it's called a reading finesse. If you're a defense guy, you got to keep your outside shoulder free and try to keep him to try to make it cut back because the linebacker's got to fill the hole. So in a zone blocking scheme, defense, it puts more pressure because it's not just the physical, it's also mental, and you got to make sure you stay in your lanes. Man, if you're better than the offensive lineman and you line up and now that guy's got to come straight at you and man, he doesn't get push and he doesn't get the help and it's just mano a mano, defensive guys usually can throw guys on and it's harder to man up guys because someone usually are getting beat.
Lo, is it harder to do goal line offense with a zone blocking scheme as opposed to a man-to-man scheme? Because in the man-to-man, if you're, you know, you need a yard, is it easier in the man scheme because you can just be more direct and physical?
You know what? I think that it depends on what you have, because you can have a 6'2", a defense 6'2". That means six down linemen, two linebackers. Now, if they're pinched in and they're pinched in, usually those guys are the middle guys are going to pinch. They're taught to pinch in and then submarine. Now, if you have a fullback or if you have a play where you're faking it into the line, and I think that's what a lot of teams do. You watch it; they hit in the line, and then it's the kick. Because usually that outside guy who's got force as a safety, he usually gets nosy. When he sees that hand going into the line, he usually crashes or comes down the line. And that's why you guys see sometimes the edge gets compromised because the safety, he loses contain and tries to get in on the tackle. He peeps in and he doesn't do his job, get nosy. So if they're not pinching, if they're lined up in a 6'2", and they're not running gaps, if they're running gaps, then you know a guy's in a gap, usually they block down. So when they're blocking down, so if you know the guy that's over the guard, he's in that gap, that guard is going to block him down. Another guy's lined up inside where the tackle is, so he's in that gap. The tackle's going to block him down. Now the lineman, when you run the ball as an offense, that man, because it's still blocking down, as a running back, you want to slow to that hole, and usually it's a bounce. You bounce out, but then you got to get skinny and get north and south at the end. So it depends on the how they're lined up, Dibs. Man, and then the gaps determines where the running back is going in those goal line situations.
Whitey Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. It's a football Friday with the 49ers trying to avoid that 0-2 start against the Jets. What would an 0-2 start mean? We'll look at that coming up in 10 minutes on 95.7 The Game. I wanted to ask you guys about a couple of trends we saw week one. Well, I shouldn't say trends because we don't know yet. We need more than 1 week. But a couple things that jumped out about play in the NFL last weekend. See if you notice them. See what you think of them. First of all, kicking was terrible. Let's see. Overall, kickers league-wide last week. Week one hit on 70, just under 72% of their field goal tries. Lowest success rate in the opening week of the season since at least 2001. And the 11th worst mark for any individual week over that frame. None of those seasons came in the first 3 years of the sample here by NFL.com. But kicking last week, field goal kicking, and of course, Gostkowski drove down the numbers Monday night.
Oh, boy.
But 71.6% of field goal attempts were good in week one.
Yeah, I'd like to do a deeper dive analysis, and maybe I'll have a look at that on my own here. But it seems to me, Whitey, that kickers are being asked to kick longer field goals than ever before. Because if you get into a situation, let's say it's fourth and two and you're on the opponent's 19-yard line, that's going to be a 36-yard field goal. Teams more often than not now are going to go in that situation. If you're faced with, you know, fourth and 11 at the 19, okay, maybe you're going to kick. But I think because teams are being more aggressive on fourth and short and fourth and medium, it's preventing kickers from having a number of those easier field goal opportunities. You know, the old expression of, ah, you got to put the points on the board here. Teams have realized that you don't necessarily have to put the points on the board. The risk of going for the touchdown is worth it because the reward of getting four, maybe even five more points is so great. So I think that's definitely a factor. Also, there's something about Tennessee because the last time a kicker in Tennessee had such a dreadful game, it was about 19 years, Lo. Should we play another round of Does Lo Remember?
I love that game.
No, he hates this game, though, because it happens to be Al Del Greco when Lo was a Titan and he missed not one.
Wow, Steven. Oh, not thanks, two, Steven, for waking up.
But three field goals as Tennessee gacked it away at Adelphia against the Baltimore Ravens.
To your point, they're probably all like, what, 55, 56, 57 yarders, something along those lines?
From Del Greasy?
Yeah.
No. They were shorter, and one of them was, in fact, blocked. It was a block six that ultimately ended the season for
Why are you doing that?
Interesting. As we were, you know, he I'm was getting fired up about blocking and goal line standing.
And he goal was, line.
And, yes. Dibs goes Del Greco on him. And are you okay, big fella?
I was doing such a good job. You guys had me in the show. Start talking about 6-2 and goal line defenses. Where's the running game? Where's the running lanes? Really trying to teach and educate. And then Dibs wanted to reach back and go 19 years ago and something that still hurts me to this day, and a lot of things that didn't fulfill. And, you know, just I don't know if that was needed. I think that he was wrong and out of line.
It's a great uptick. I'd have to put the blame squarely on the shoulders of Whitey for bringing up the fact that there was a lack of kicking, lacking kicking this week.
And, licking?
You know, yes. I was going to go there because I know you like lackling, of tackling.
Wow.
But a lack of kicking is, in fact, a, you know, but we don't need to make it quite so verbose. But that's why I went back there, Law. I'd like to apologize. I don't know if Brenda Lee would be made available for this apology, but I'm sorry. So sorry.
All right. Yeah, that's a great point you raise, though, Dibs, about the longer kicks, because the Arizona kicker at one point last week, what it is, missed three field goals. It's like, yeah, but they're all 50 yards plus, and you made the point years ago that in the NFL, 50 is the new 40. I remember you pointed that out. Yeah. One more trend. Will it become a trend in the NFL week one? Holding penalties. Did you notice? Where'd they go? Where did they go? They were down 78% from the opening week a year ago. The lowest number we've seen going back through 2001. Holding penalties way down. As a result, perhaps, teams scored 87 touchdowns in week one. So touchdowns way up, probably because, at least in part, holding way down. And thank goodness we don't need it. It's a touchdown! Holding, number 65, 10-yard penalty. So I think that's good for the league. It's smart. And last year they got a little crazy, I think, at times with all the holding. So that's a positive trend from a fan's perspective, right? Less holding, more touchdowns. I'm watching more football.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the nature of it. Because if you have a drive, Low, let's say a team gets a touchback and they start first and 10 at their own 25, and they run one of those milquetoast BS runs into the line of scrimmage. They get one. It's second and 9. Big pass play, but holding, number 65. So now all of a sudden it's second and 19. It's most likely going to result in a punt. So the next two or three plays become two downs, as opposed to, you know, second and 9, maybe you pick up three, third and 6. Ooh, we've got intrigue. Right. We've got intrigue. So I think Whitey makes a good point.
No, he does. And I'm not mad at the not calling the holding, but what I don't like is – I think they're missing a lot of plays on the goal line. I think a lot of these are touchdowns that should not be reviewed. I think when a guy's falling down and he's going over, you know, the goal line, and even though his knee's down, and because once his body hits, it's over the goal line, it should be where the ball is at that time. It's really like last night. You take that and you look at what happened. Man, you look at the Bengals. They might win that game. Now they're up by four. You know, instead of, you know, being down. So I don't know. I just think that sometimes they're too perfect, especially when it comes to goal line. Did the ball break the plane or not? And I just think they need to get over that.
So you're saying, let's just get rid of replay. And I know that won't happen, but is that what you're saying? You know what? It's just better if they called it a touchdown, let's just move on.
I think when it's that close, when you're like, was it a silent fart or was it a loud fart? He farted. You know what I mean? I just think, look, the guy's knees, and then you look at his body when he lands, he's in the end zone. Let it stand. I mean, let it stand. You know what I'm saying there, Whitey?
Wow.
Quality radio. Indicating he has something to say, but he doesn't actually want to say anything. Just let that percolate a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes you got to just wait, let it dissipate, not so much percolate. You want to open up a proverbial window and maybe find some incense after that hot take.
Right, right. On the text line, 888-957-9570. A couple 49er fans weighing in here. Sadly, they decided to stop calling holding in the Super Bowl. From the 707, not positive. Positively ridiculous, the same way holdings weren't called in the Super Bowl. It's BS. Make the call. So here with the kicking, I touched a nerve of Lo Neal's inadvertently. And obviously here talking about, hey, less holding, fewer holding.
Yeah.
That's great. And I've touched a raw nerve here with 49ers.
Yes, and people just cannot be satiated when it comes to the officials. And this is just my monthly memo to all of you armchair zebras out there. Get off your butt, all of you. Contact your local officials organization and go out there and do it. You go out there and try it, and you'll understand how much nuance goes into it. How much give and take. You could call holding on every play. We know this. You could call traveling on every possession. You can call a balk on every single throw to first base. But there's some wiggle room in here, which is why the officials are so underrated and so underappreciated. Yeah, you want them to call holding every play? Football would be an unwatchable sea of yellow laundry. So for all you armchair zebras, get off your butt. Buy a whistle, go officiate some youth sports, and then talk to me about this and that.
Sometimes, though, Dib, you got to admit it's a little too much. You got to admit, Dib, sometimes you guys a little too much.
Yeah. Low on the text line here, Mentos, by the way, has been suggested as a flatulence remedy. I don't know. Gino from Scottsdale says, with all this technology, why? Why can't they place some kind of microchip center inside the football to track where it is on the field? From the 707, Low is right. They don't place the ball precisely all game, and then they analyze a TD for 10 minutes and call it back.
Yes. Thank you. What area code was that again?
That was, of course, seat of all knowledge and wisdom, the 707.
707, very, very wise individual.
You can't pray for rain and then complain about the mud, because all you fans, all you talk about is, oh, we need more replay. We want to get the calls right, darn it. We want to get the calls right. And so now we're going to look at the most important play in all of football, which is the scoring of points. And because, we want to get it right, everybody. And now all of a sudden we're going to take extra time to make sure we get it right. Now you're going to complain about that, too. You can't pray for rain and complain about the dang mud. It's all you people.
Well, you know what, Mr. Meat? Well, you and I will be at church, and we'll be able to pray for all of that, okay? We could pray for rain and mud, okay? So when we get Giants, keep going. Go, Giants, go. Let me retract there. Because of the fact when you sit here and say it's the most important play and you want to get it right, do you know how many times they spot the ball and you've seen it? It's third and four, and the guy only gets – he only gets friggin' two or three, and because he slides, the ref just gets up there, and he just puts the ball down, and he wasn't even close to the first down. Come on. You know that happens the same, too. But on the end zone play, though, I got to go overboard. It happens every night, every single game. Start watching the spot. It's 1 to 2 yards off every time. Go watch it. Don't give me this, okay? Start watching where guys go down and look how these officials move it, Dibs. You guys are not good at times. That's all.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1. San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Whoa.
Whitey, Lowe, and Dibs. And, of course, Lowe alluding there to the fact that it looks like – has he already clinched his bet now? Dibs, has he won his Giants bet with you? Is it all over?
If they've reached win number 26, then – yes, in fact, it is over. I believe they're 26-24 now. Is that the actual number?
Oh,
I've
that.
I've stopped really paying that close of attention because, honestly, the bet is null and void for a number of reasons. First and First and foremost, Whitey, you know this as a 30-year radio veteran. There's a certain rule, unwritten rule of radio, where you don't cross-pollinate bets from one incarnation of a show to another. So that, in and of itself, and it's the unwritten rules of radio, Lo. I don't know if you necessarily know that. The second piece
don't
of this,
do this to
and
me,
I'm
going
to need Nice Guy Steven to. I'm going to get Nice Guy Steven to cue up some Game of Thrones, because when they fell to 8-16.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.